Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook Member Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. 2019 Financial Month. What a powerful month. Ever powerful financial month. And my father, creator of Lifebook, John Butcher, is on the line. How you doing, man?
Hey, Jordan. Doing great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. This has been a really impressive month. Been a powerful month. I just wanted to start off by addressing the importance of this category and just talking to you about some of the interesting statistical findings that you found at Lifebook regarding the financial category.
Well, yeah, you know, the one that really sticks out the most is that this is the category that the most people say they need to improve the most. So 26.1% of all introspect assessment takers choose the financial category as their category of key focus and say, this is the one I need to improve most. So that's one out of four. When you got 12 categories, you know, that's like a three times the average. So this is the category on a lot of people's minds. This is the category where if you achieve success in this category, it certainly doesn't absolutely guarantee success in other categories of life, but it can make things a heck of a lot easier in so many areas.
Totally.
If you've got a little financial bandwidth.
It's so crazy, man, because it's such a dynamic category. What you just said is so telling. Like, if you're shredded and in incredible shape, you're guaranteed a lot of good things. If you have your emotional life under control or your character under control, you're guaranteed a lot of things. Financial life is so crazy because people can wind up with so much money and then still be unhappy or, you know, in a worse spot than if they just had less, which is really interesting because we were just talking, you know, I want to dive into what you think the remedy is for why so many people need help in this category. And if I can kind of tee you up, Lifebook is all about getting conscious and really finding what you want. And it's interesting because I thought to myself, you know, when we're kids, we want everything, right? We want the nice car and the nice house and to be like this guy and that guy. We want all the things.
But true.
so of course, someone's going to say, I need more out of this category. But when you go through Lifebook and you really distill down the things that will make you happy, whatever that answer is for you, I think the further you can distill that down, the easier of a time you're going to have achieving real satisfaction and happiness.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Jordan. I think a lot of people put the cart before the horse, especially in this area of life, right? And I've been in this situation before where I'm just charging down the road of trying to make as much money as I can without really any thought to how much money do I need to fund the quality of life that I want to live.
Totally.
That's really, that right there is a big secret that almost nobody does because it implies some pretty important things. First of all, it implies that you know the kind of life you want to live, that you've really sat down and thought through every important area of your life and you've got a crystal clear life vision. So you know with certainty, with you know, absolute clarity, how you want to be spending your days on this planet. And then you take a look at that and you say, okay, how much money do I need to do that at a high level? Still, you can dial things up and down. You can say, well, I'm not happy with the fact that my quality of life that I just defined is going to cost me $657,000 a year.
Right.
I really don't want to work that hard to make that kind of, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a look at my life vision and I'm going to see if I can get creative and still get the same kind of quality of life pop by spending a little bit less money.
Totally.
And you know what a lot of people do and what I've done in the past is just try to make as much money as I can without any real regard to how much money I need to live the life that I've envisioned on this planet. And I'll tell you what you said is exactly right. When you're younger, you tend to want everything, as much as you can get. You want to try all the stuff. Well, Miss and I are in our 50s now, and our life vision is a hell of a lot less expensive than it used to be.
Totally. This is what I'm talking about exactly, man.
Yeah, exactly. We need a really nice, comfortable place to live. We want to be around our kids. We want to be in a beautiful place. We want to have the ability to travel, you know, but we don't need the kind of things we used to need. We don't need the boats and the friggin' cars and the, you know, super expensive this and that anymore. We've done that and we've, you know, I don't want to disparage anyone who really wants to go after wealth. It's a
fun ride.
it's a privilege to live in a day and age when you really can pick yourself up by your bootstraps and achieve serious financial abundance. Very, very rare in human history. So we're all privileged to be able to live in a time and place when we can actually do that. So mm-hmm. I don't want to disparage that. But at the same time, there's a real peace of mind that comes with having defined a life vision, a quality of life that you want to live, that isn't going to cost you 16 hours a day to fund it. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely, man. And I know I always like bring it around to comparing it to other categories, but what you just described, you know, there is no disparaging. And the reason there's no disparaging there is because there's no right answer. Were you wrong to have been pursuing so hard into your businesses and into the material world?
I wouldn't change a thing.
Were you wrong to have? Exactly. It all really depends. And finances are so crazy because you can't really do that with health and fitness. I don't see a lot of people arguing the benefits of obesity. Sure, you can say I don't want to be in incredible shape and sacrifice that much of my time. But when comparing it to other categories, it's so interesting because there's no guarantees and there's no right answer in the financial category.
Yeah, exactly. The right answer is your answer, all things considered.
Yes.
And, you know, Missy and I have always been the people that could be happy in a tent on the ocean. We could be happy living in a banana tree, in a treehouse.
Right. Well,
now we couldn't be happy living in a banana tree in the middle of Calcutta or in a place where, you know, we need to be in beautiful surroundings where we wake up feeling inspired and connected and grateful. But we don't need a lot, is what I'm saying. We don't need a lot. Miss and I have always wanted to be surrounded by beauty, but that can be done in a lot of different ways. You can do the Taj Mahal, or right. You can just go for the natural beauty in a really simple life. Like you said, there are no rules. There is no right answer except the answer that you decide that you want to go after.
I love that.
And that's our responsibility in this category, is to decide how much time and effort we want to put into it. And I think that one of the smartest ways you can come at it is really defining the life that you want to live, asking yourself, how much is that life going to cost? And then ask yourself, am I willing to pay the price for that? Am I willing to go ahead and roll up my sleeves and make that money so that I can have that life? Mm-hmm. Or do I want to dial it down a little bit so I don't have to work so hard? That this is a decision that all of us have to make.
It's a simple series of questions, and it's so empowering. And I don't want to get too far off course before we jump into the awesome questions here, but what you just summarized a second ago is exactly why Lifebook is bound to be the number one personal development program in the world, because you come up with your own answers. I challenge anyone to explain to me how any one guru can stand on stage and give an answer that applies to the entire crowd. I just don't get it.
No, Jordan, if there is one thing that we've learned from our 25 years of doing this, it's exactly that. And we've said this over and over, but you can't hear it enough times, because this is what's wrong with the world today. And it's the principle that, you know, this is the principle that we've discovered that is absolutely, we believe, correct across the board. There is no one size fits all answer to any area of life for all 7 billion people on this planet. And just realizing that we're all different. We've all got different wants, needs, and desires. We've got different talents. We've got different intelligences. We're gonna have different life visions. We have different paths to get to happiness and success and balance mm-hmm. and fulfillment. You know, those roads are different for all of us. And when we can really understand that, maybe then we can start to bring a little bit of tolerance and respect to the way that other people are living their lives, or to the opinions that other people have. We don't need to all be exactly the same, right? Mm-hmm. There is no one right strategy for everyone. It depends on who you are, where you are, and what you want. So, I mean, that is the most important thing I would say that we've learned through this entire process. And that's why Lifebook is an empty system, that you fill in with your own wisdom and your own intelligence, because no one can hand you the answers.
Right.
It's 100%.
Yeah, those gurus, they can be incredibly inspirational, and they can thoughts, and they can say things that apply to your life deeply and change you for the better, but they will not provide all the answers. None of them will.
Impossible. However, I will say this. You can find teachers out there that you really resonate with. And when you do, you should voraciously consume everything that they put out.
Totally.
You can learn from a lot, but that group of teachers, that group of peers, that group of advisors and guides is going to be different for everybody, depending on how you want your life to go. At the end of the day, you are the decision maker. You are the primary creative force. You are the driver at the center of your life. And it's your job to define how you want your life to go and then to gather the resources that you need to make it happen. That's what Missy and I have always done. And that's what we're, you know, that's what we're sharing with other people now.
Love it, man. I'm so, so honored to be a part of this. I'm not going to go further off course any further. Let's jump into these awesome questions, man.
Let's do it. We got good questions this month.
First question coming from Gava. Sorry if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. They ask, what would you tell your 20-year-old self to do with a couple $1,000s? Is it wise to diversify in index funds and Roth IRAs while still young before bootstrapping a startup and before specializing in one type of investment?
If I could only sit down with my 20-year-old self, I would give him a talking to.
You'd stop him from entering the liquor store with his $1,000.
I'll tell you one thing I wouldn't be talking to my 20-year-old self about is index funds. I would have a whole lot of other more important subjects to talk to that guy about. So here's the thing, Jeeva, that is such a frigging great question. But I really do want to approach it from a little bit bigger picture. If I could talk to my 20-year-old self, here straight up, here's the 50,000-foot advice that I would give him. First, I would say this: put away 10% of every dime you ever make, starting now, and never touch it. That's number one. If you do that, you will assure your financial future. Jordan, if I would have done that, if any of us would do that, that's so friggin' simple. And that's why we don't do it, maybe, because it seems too good to be true, too simple. No,
right.
That's what we all need to be doing. Just do that. Don't do anything else. And you're going to assure your financial future if you're 20. And if you have a decent level of intelligence and commitment to living a good life, you're going to make the money in your life. But we all let it slip through our fingers. Don't do that. That's the first thing I tell my 20-year-old self. And then, I mean, if I think back to how much money I've made in the last, 37 years, I'm 57. If I would have saved 10% of every dime I made in the last 37 years, holy cow, I'd be in a completely different place right now. So that is the very first thing I tell my 20-year-old self. Put away 10% of every dime you make and never touch it. That's what I told my 14-year-old son. That's what I've told. I didn't really have to tell Jade. Jade started doing that. She started doing that from the time she was 8. Jade is going to be fabulously wealthy because of that one thing. That's the reason I can't stress it enough. And no one does it. They should teach this in grade school, right?
Oh God, okay, don't get me started. Don't get me started on that one, man. Absolutely. But I would recommend to Gava also to make sure to listen to all the other episodes of the podcast this month, specifically the Money Advantage guys, Rachel and Bruce, because they have some incredible advice when it comes to retaining your own wealth and your own capital and building your own, basically paying yourself first and learning how to turn that money and make it work for you.
That's fantastic. And you know what? I can't give that advice because I'm not good at investments. But let me just tell you the three things I would say. Put away 10% and never touch it. Number two, basically what Javis said is, what would you tell a 20-year-old with a couple $1,000s? And here's the second thing I'd say. Never lose your principal. Never lose your principal, no matter what. When you take that investment and you make that investment, it's okay to not make a big return on it. That's a loss you should be willing to take, but never risk that principle so that it can go away completely. Because that's another thing I've done, Jordan. I've lost a lot of money by making investments where the money that I put in never came back to me. It's okay to not make a killing as far as your interest or as far as your profit, but don't lose that principle.
Right. Investing it in something like a startup or something like that, you can lose all of it. And that is a real risk.
Everything comes with a risk, but what I would say at least is don't lose all your principal. I've seen so many of my friends and loved ones and family members and myself have done that. Don't do that. And then the third thing is what I would tell my 20-year-old self is get a good financial advisor, sit down with a financial advisor and learn what a financial plan is. You learn the basic components of a financial plan, a net worth statement or a balance sheet, basic cash flow analysis. And look, beware, because he or she, your financial advisor, is going to try to direct you into investing in ways that will make them money. So beware of that.
Totally.
They've got their own agenda. But, you know, that's a good way for you to learn, is by sitting down with somebody who knows what they're doing and hopefully finding some good guidance. Now, by the way, I've had people say that it's confusing because I've said don't trust the experts before, and I've also said you need to develop a financial plan.
They're both equally true, unfortunately.
Well, they are, but let me make a clarification here. What I'm saying is don't abdicate. Don't put your financial life in somebody else's
yes.
hands.
Don't give them the keys to the house. Yeah.
You will get your ass handed to you if you do that. I mean, I've done that enough to really be able to give this advice. I do recommend for most people that they get a financial advisor, but go in with both eyes open. Know that this person is going to make money on you. Don't just hand over your financial life to them because they're the expert. Get in there and take responsibility for your own financial life by getting an expert next to you that can give you good advice, but you stay in control. You make sure you understand everything they're doing. That's the balance I think you want to create. Yeah. And by the way, alternatively, get online and learn. You can learn just about anything online now. I love learning from another person when I can, because that can really shortcut things. But other people are very suited to doing research online, and all the information you need is out there. So, Jeeva, just to summarize, put away 10% of everything you make and never touch it. Don't make investments where you can lose your principal. And get some good advice, whether that's online or by hiring a financial advisor, but keep your eyes open and keep responsibility for your financial life all the way through that process. That's the advice I'd give to my 20-year-old self.
Love it. Best of luck to you. Next question coming from Marina. How do you handle the feeling that you're not ready for your career or financial dream to happen yet?
Well, that might be true, or it might not. It depends on what your dream is. It depends on what your current circumstances are. And it depends on what you're prepared to do, what changes you're prepared to make, how high you're willing to raise the bar. I mean, listening to your intuition is super important. If you're getting signals from your, you know, highest self that you may not be ready to start down the path to that giant financial vision, because of the amount of bandwidth that it's going to take away from other areas of your life or whatever, that's something that you should probably listen to. But on the other hand, you don't want, that might just be fear rearing its ugly head, right?
Yes. Yeah. Is it a limiting belief? Are there voices popping in your head, doubting you and putting you down? That is a good sign that it might be a limiting belief. Whereas like you're saying, maybe the timing just isn't right. You need to decide where that is coming from.
If it's fear, my opinion is you don't want fear to be the thing that holds you back. You never want fear to be the thing that holds you back. Because here's the thing, you can feel the fear and do it anyway. Some of the best talents that I have in my life right now started out as things that I was super afraid to do. But I was like, okay, I'm going to be afraid and just put my toe in the water. And this is how you learn and grow and get good at stuff, is you, because anytime you're expanding your range of talents in any area, you're going to be out of your comfort zone. And that's uncomfortable. You can feel the fear and do it anyway. So I'd respect your intuition and really ask yourself, do I feel that I'm ready to start down this path? I don't want fear to be the thing that holds me back. You know, I want to bring a healthy dose of intention to my life, get clear on what I want, and start moving toward it with determination. But at the same time, if I'm really not ready, I don't want to put myself in a compromised situation. So I think what it comes down to is consciousness. There's no way that we can answer for Marina whether or not she's truly ready for her career or financial dream to happen yet. Only she can answer that question. And my advice would be, you don't want fear to be the thing that holds you back.
Absolutely.
But you also want to listen to your internal wisdom. So take some time to meditate on that. And you know, we wish you the very best. This is, you're in it. You're in the game of life. This is what it's all about. Right?
Totally. Absolutely. And, you know, stay tuned next month for the career limiting belief clearing. That will set you on course if this is a limiting belief. And on that note, I would say just connect with other people and ask them, hey, am I kicking myself here? Is this a limiting belief? Or, you know, is this really something that needs to breathe? Is this an idea that needs to breathe and have some time? So I love it, man. That's great advice. Best of luck to you, Marina. Best of luck. Next question coming from Sylvie. Hi, John. How would you recommend to get started in investment options? What are your favorite books and articles on the subject? My financial area has finally started blossoming thanks to Lifebook, and I want to sow those seeds for the future. Thank you. Signed, the girl with the Lifebook tattoo. Oh, I love that.
Hi, Sylvie. I love Sylvie. Sylvie, much love from me and Missy. Yeah, Sylvie put a Lifebook tattoo on her wrist when she went through Lifebook. And I'm so glad to hear that your financial life has started blooming. Well, Sylvie, here's the thing. Truthfully, I don't like financial books. I don't read financial books. They bore the shit out of me. I'm sorry, but that's the case. But here are the books that over the years, Lifebook members have really said that they've gotten a lot out of. Garrett Gunderson's Killing Sacred Cows, David Bach's Finish Rich, and I've heard that Tony Robbins' book is great. You know, his book on money, what's that called, Jordan? Anyway, Tony Robbins, all you have to do is just Google search and bam. Personally, I would rather have a person help me. And so I give you the same advice that we talked about when we answered Jeeva's question, the advice to my 20-year-old self. Sylvie, you might want to consider reaching out to a financial advisor and just sitting down and showing them your world. Keep in mind that they're going to try to direct you to things that make them money, but you're smart enough to know that that's what's happening. And that may or may not be good advice for you. You just need to know that they've got some skin in the game here. So you got to be careful about that. But, you know, I'd sit down with somebody and say, look, these are my goals. This is what I'm working with right now. What are the things that I need to be considering here? And again, you know, put away 10%. That's a great idea. Never lose your principal. That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. But I don't really have many direct financial resources because, guys, here's the thing. I'm an artist. I'm mildly dyslexic. I'm not good with numbers. I never have been. I don't enjoy it. So for me, the right thing to do is to focus on making money because I get that making money is about creating value. I'm an artist. Creating stuff. I make programs. I'm a product developer. I know how to do that. I know how to make stuff and make people happy or help make people more successful or whatever. And so that they want to give me money. So I'm good at that piece. What I'm not good at is the numbers piece. So I don't really enjoy spending time in this category. What I want to do is sit down with somebody super smart and tell them what my goals are, knowing that they've got their own axe to grind. So I've got to stay in control of this I've got to keep responsibility of my financial life, mm-hmm. but I want a person to help guide me through this. And, you know, Missy and I have a very special person in our lives who helps us with this. Our oldest friend, which doesn't mean that he's the oldest guy we know. It means that he is the friend that we've had for the longest. His name is Jim, and he moved in across the street from me when I was 12. He's 15 years older than me, and Jim and I worked on a lot of companies together, and he's basically our financial advisor. So Jim is helping us out now, and that's a big, big thing for me to be able to sit down with a human being and work on my stuff. So that's what I would suggest, Sylvie. You might mm-hmm. want to actually get with a human, or if you want to read books, what I would do is I would probably hop online and take a look at what the highest rated financial books are. Oh, you know, there's also Kiyosaki, the guy that
Rich
wrote
Dad,
the, yes.
Yeah. Kiyosaki.
Actually, that was a book that I read early on, and that really had an effect on me.
This month's Life Note. Yeah, they re-released it recently. Yeah, they re-released it with new kind of abridged stuff, or not abridged, but you know, added on stuff. And yeah, so that's this month's Life Note. Really interesting.
Yeah, so let me throw in two more books that I have read that really did have a profound impact on me early on. The Richest Man in Babylon, absolute friggin' masterpiece. And of course, Think and Grow Rich. Those are like the classics that give you super fundamentals.
Totally.
So that's about as good advice as I can give on books, which I know is kind of lame. Sorry about that.
No. But it's
I'm more the try to work with somebody kind
of
guy.
It's a great start. And a lot of the people that you recommended, you know, Garrett Gunderson, for instance, and the aforementioned Money Advantage team, they're really about empowering you. People, there's this understanding that there are a lot of investors, a lot of financial advisors, like you've discussed, who are kind of pushing their own stuff and trying to get you into their world. Well, you know, a lot of these new courses teach you how to do it yourself. And I think that's a great place to go. So I'll throw out some podcasts to wrap it up. The Money Advantage podcast.
And let me just say the opposite is true too. The old classics didn't have any axe to grind. That's all about principles right there. That's just some good foundational stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like Think and Grow Rich and Richest Man in Babylon. Those are solid, man.
Totally. And finally, The Disciplined Investor, Horowitz. The guy's name is Horowitz, like Dave Horowitz or something. I forget. But The Disciplined Investor podcast. It's like twice a week. He just talks about investments. You got to check that out. So that's a good way to kind of keep your finger on the pulse.
Then let me just say one more thing. I'm sorry to belabor the point, but there's John Carter, dude. There's, you know, Carter, who is an expert in day trading, and I'm not necessarily suggesting that particular path. What I'm saying is, Sylvie, if you are interested in any specific sort of paths to wealth, like John Carter, well, Jordan, why don't you explain a little bit about him, because you've interviewed him and you know that guy's DNA.
Yeah, totally. He's a revolutionary day trader. He's really quite an intelligent guy. I'll go ahead and release the episode that we did together this month is like a little bit of a bonus content. So make sure you check the Facebook group, the Mind Valley Lifebook Facebook group. I will post the John Carter interview and you'll learn all about his incredible analytical work when it comes to the stock market.
So he teaches people how to make money at home by day trading. The reason that I'm bringing it up is because there's probably 20 different paths like that. Very specific, you know, people out there that are teaching very specific ways to invest or to make money. And you know, you could always start to follow somebody who really knows what they're doing in a very specific money-making vertical.
Yeah, formula. Absolutely. And we're actually going to talk about that in a later question. But yeah, very interesting stuff. Best of luck to you, Sylvie. Good luck on your financial journey. Next question coming from Wallace. What's the most impactful financial advice you've ever received?
Man, I've gotten some good financial advice from a lot of super smart people. Okay. First, the first thing that comes to mind is my dear friend, Joe Polish, who's one of the best marketers in the world. And I was so frustrated. I forget even what this company was, but it's like, Joe, this is the best friggin' product in the world. Why the hell can't I sell it? What the hell is going on? This is the best thing since sliced bread. What? And here's what he said to me. Never forget it. Changed my life. He said, John, here's why. Because there's no relationship between being great and getting paid. There is no relationship between being great and getting paid. You can have the best thing in the world, and unless you know how to message it properly and get it out there in front of people, no one's ever going to hear about it.
Mm.
And Jordan, we can see examples of this everywhere. Beta was a highly superior format to VHS, but VHS won because of their marketing. There's so many examples of that. You can't just be good at what you do. You have to learn the ability to market and sell.
Wow.
You have to.
And
I don't like that. I don't like sales and marketing.
Yeah.
I never have, you know, but you have to take responsibility to let people know the good stuff that you do, or they'll never know it. They'll never be able to purchase it. It'll never make an impact on their lives. So that was a huge one. There's no relationship between being great and getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
Second one, Garrett Gunderson. My dear friend Garrett Gunderson is the one who taught me to invest only in what you know. You're going to get your ass handed to you if you turn your money over to somebody who's going to invest it in something you have no idea about. And my God, my investment life is a verification, an absolute verification of that philosophy. Every time I have turned my money over to somebody else to invest in something I have no idea about, it's gone. Every time I'm in, every single time I have invested my money in something that I am an expert in, it's never gone sideways. I mean, there's always risk in investment. There always is. But if you take a look at those two different paths, there's no question that, that's some of the best financial advice I've ever gotten in my life.
Absolutely, man. Well, I think that there's a common theme here, which is you've cultivated relationships with people who will answer your phone call happily.
That's absolutely right.
I mean, that's huge.
Here's another one. Here's another one, Jordan, by Brian Kay, my longtime accountability partner, one of the best human beings I know. I think that he actually got the highest life quotient in the entire life community.
Quantifiably the most successful human being of all time.
And basically what Brian told me is, John, don't ever lose your principle, no matter what. Do not put your principle at risk. It was way too hard to earn that money. You can go ahead and invest it, but always make sure that if you're going to lose anything, it's going to be the interest, or you don't make quite as much profit as you thought, but never lose that principle. Mm-hmm. That's something that is just such good advice. And then my last one is by somebody that I don't know personally, but this is one of my virtual advisors, Warren Buffett, the greatest investor in the history of the world, who said the great quote that I've said so many times, especially in Lifebook Mastery: the difference between successful people and highly successful people is that highly successful people say no to almost everything. One of the best pieces of financial advice I've ever gotten is, don't be unfocused. Don't spread your energy all over the place. Figure out what you're good at and stay in that lane. You know, Garrett Gunderson backs that up by really pushing back at the concept of diversification in your investments. He calls it diversifying.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, he has a whole riff on that.
So he's basically, no, find your channel and stay in that channel. And that's what Warren Buffett has done. He's only made a few investments in his whole life, but it's unbelievable. So once you figure out where that lane is that you can really create results, stay in that lane. Mm-hmm. Become an expert in that lane. That's super good financial advice.
I want to swing back around on my kind of line of questioning here. Other than the Warren Buffett quote, this advice you received from friends, why did they answer your call? Why did they give you this advice when they asked? What did it get to the point? How did it get to the point where you have these people in your phone, and not only are they your business partners, but they'll actually see your name come up on their phone and go, oh, it's John, and pick up after hours and go, hey, you know what I mean? How did you get to that point?
100%. Well, this is called category interconnectivity, Jordan. This is what we know as Lifebook members. This is the magic of life right here. This is where the social life category meets the financial category. Yes. These people, Brian Kay was my accountability partner for 4 years. Joe Polish is one of the greatest connectors in the world. He introduced me to Garrett Gunderson and Brian Kay. And I mean, so it's like, this is where these categories come together. It's that Jim Rohn quote that, I'm not going to get it exactly right, but paraphrasing, is the quality of your life is a direct reflection of the expectations of your peer group, the five people you spend the most time with. So, you know, Miss and I really try to spend our time with people that we really admire and respect. And Jordan, you're so right. Any problem I have in my life, and we're in the financial category right now, so sticking with that, you know, I'm trying to sell a property, or I'm, you know, I just got a banknote called and I'm not sure how our cash flow, how we're going to get through the next few months or whatever it is. I've got someone I can pick up the phone and be like, hey, Ken, I need some advice right now. And my friends are there for me, mm-hmm. and I'm there for them. And that's what's friggin' so wonderful. That's what I want to turn the entire Lifebook community into, right?
Totally.
A personal development brain where we're all connected to the smartest, wisest, most self-directed people on this planet, and anything we need in our lives, we can find the answer to.
I love it, man. Yeah. And I think you got to really give yourself credit for the last thing you said, which is you're there for them. I think that's the reason why they answer the phone is because you've spent years and years giving. You give and give. And not just that, you take a look at someone like Joe Polish, who I'm sure he has, you know, hundreds and hundreds of amazing connections with people who make him more money than you. But I think he's most excited to answer your call because you're funny and educated and like those intangibles and witty. You know what I mean? Like those intangibles, yeah. Those little things that just make people smile and want to help you out, in addition to what I think you've really done, which is helped these people over the years, probably given hours of your time, and time is money, and your brain power applied to whatever their facet of life is. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, man, I appreciate that kind sentiment very, very much. And that's exactly right. That's what's so beautiful about relationships. You try to bring as much as you can to the party. And when you need help, you get it. And it's so frigging great. And that's what I'd love to see this entire community turn into, is this cyclone of friggin' goodness and support and encouragement and inspiration. And I think that's where we're really headed.
That's really cool, man. That's great stuff. Thank you, Wallace. Best of luck to you. Next question. Let's move on here to Joanna's question. Do you have any advice for people who have a job that they like, which gives them satisfaction, but doesn't provide enough money for living the quality of life in their life vision?
Well, that's a tough one. Okay, you got a job that you enjoy and it satisfies you, but you got a life vision that you need to fund, and it's clear that that job ain't going to get you there. So now, by the way, let me just say this. I think that's more of a career question, just to let you know. I think that's a better question for next month. But
right.
So I'll do a short answer. I think that the answer is math. If you've created a life vision that's going to cost you X, and you love that life vision and you're committed to achieving it, but your career only generates Y, and Y is less than X, there's only two possible choices. You've either got to downsize your life vision, get creative, figure out a way to get that quality of life in a way that won't cost you as much dollars or pounds or euros or yen, or you can decide you want to go ahead and upsize your career and friggin' roll up your sleeves and create some financial abundance. That's the only way to sort of make that math work. So it's one or the other. And it could be a combination of both.
Right.
Jordan, creativity. Creativity is a massive answer sometimes. How can you achieve the same or better quality of life spending less money? Meaning, can you do Europe on $50 a day instead of $200 a day? That kind of a thing, right?
Right.
Or how can you take this career that you've got that gives you satisfaction, you enjoy the job, and either take that career to the next level or start something in your garage at night?
Side hustle, yeah.
The bottom line is you've got a math problem there. And the math problem can only be solved. It can be solved by looking at both sides. And you've got to either take one side or the other and change it, or a combination of both.
Yeah, man. And that's a tough spot, right? Because you don't want to leave a job that you're enjoying so much. That's a terrible feeling. So I think that really only contemplation can solve this problem.
At the same time, your career, in my mind, this is my stuff. Your career exists to fund your quality of life. Your career exists to fund your quality of life. So if your career is not funding your life vision, you got some thinking to do.
That is definitely a poignant point of view there. Best of luck to you, Joanna. Next question coming from Tanya. Can you suggest some ways that stay-at-home moms and dads can generate income while looking after really young children who are time and attention intensive, like a baby and a four-year-old? Wow, that's a tough one, but I got some advice. You go first, man.
Yeah, no, dude, you're right in the middle of it. What are you talking?
Man, it's been crazy. Well, let me just give a quick overview. First time I went through Lifebook, I was 18 years old, and one of the things in my Lifebook was I wanted to create a career and a financial life that allowed me to have the abundance that I needed, which isn't much, from anywhere in the world. And God dang, I've tried everything, man. I've tried it all. And it's finally coming to fruition, which is really exciting. And I love talking about it with you Lifebook members. But man, we've tried a lot of different things and we've had varying degrees of success. I'll tell you, I'm just going to start saying stuff that we've tried and has worked. So for instance, my wife does crafting, and Etsy pays for itself and then some. She crafts.
Hold on a second. Hold on. I gotta butt in here. His wife makes the most beautiful friggin' jewelry I have ever seen in my life. She takes crystals and this clay stuff, and so it's not
yeah,
just
it's incredible. Yeah,
the genius.
It's true. Yeah, she's really, really super talented. And that does help. I'll tell you that. But there are entire worlds of e-commerce platforms for handmade goods or printed items, all sorts of stuff, lots of e-commerce stuff that actually you can really make a lot of money off of if you have something special going on. So I would definitely recommend that. And then of course, you know, I can't bring it up without talking about media. It's really, really tough to instill this, but there is a way, there is a drive, there is a skill set, and there is a way to make money through YouTube and podcasting. It doesn't work for everybody and not everybody is cut out for it, but man, that's really where I found my niche, because everything is a media platform now. I'll tell you this, learning video and audio in 1990, 1985 is a whole different world than learning video and audio now. Literally everyone is their own media generating machines now.
Apple turned everybody into an artist. Apple turned everybody into a photographer, everybody into a videographer. You're 100% right about that.
Yeah, if you saw someone going to school for photography, it was like, okay, like have fun being broke for the rest of your life. Now... Now people are making $1 million a post on Instagram.
So
if you can just get a little bit of slice of that, I would say e-commerce platforms, media and social media and media platforms like podcasting and YouTube as well. And then, of course, you can get into the riskier stuff, which I really wouldn't recommend unless you have a talent for, you know, stuff like crypto trading. I got really into online poker. Those are really risky things I wouldn't recommend
You're talking about remote ways to make money remotely, which is exactly right.
Cash coming off your computer. Listen, I'm here to tell you, Tanya, it can happen. It's hard.
No question.
It takes years sometimes, or sometimes it happens really fast, but it can happen. You can do it. And you can do some of these things with two little kids, believe it or not.
No question. Let me talk about that a little bit. I want to go back to the very first thing you said about Ashley's jewelry. So you guys, Ashley's she's just so good at this. Like these are beautiful, beautiful pieces. And 30, 40, 50 years ago, back through human history, if she wanted to make these pieces and sell them, she'd have to either open a shop or whatever. And it would be all physical, brick and mortar. She could only talk to the people that she could actually come in contact with.
Yes, with zoning and laws and investments and loans.
Yeah, so Missy and I right now we are moving to a remote Pacific island, and the people on that island, there's a real it's sort of a poor island because the economy is small on that island. So if you've got a skill like Ashley's, you make jewelry, you can open up a little shop, and hopefully a few tourists will come in or whatever, and you can sell your stuff. But that exact same talent set, that exact everything that she does, now she can open up a little online store. And you know, instead of being on a little island where her traffic is limited to however many people walk through the store that day, say 30 or 40, she's online and there's 3 billion people online. And her exact same thing that she's doing, if you just learn how to do a little e-com website, and there's so many places you can go to learn that, ClickFunnels, our buddy Brunson, try that company. Mm-hmm. Go on clickfunnels.com and look at how easy it is to create a little online store. And all of a sudden the world is your customer base instead of just having 30 people a day be your customer base. So here's what I'd like to say to Tanya about a mom and dad generating income while being stay-at-home parents. Now, I'm not quite sure if she means both of you are stay-at-home parents or if one works and the other one is a stay-at-home parent and you're trying to monetize that. I mean, if that's the case, look, the history of the human race has been the man goes out and risks his life or whatever the frig it is. He's got to go out and do the thing, whatever the thing is. And the woman stays at home and holds down the fort and takes care of the family. And that's been the history of the human race. Now, we only need one parent. It can be either one to go out there and earn the money while the other one holds down the fort. Or for the first time in human history, you can both be at home if you want to, and figure out a way to divide and conquer, and where you're sort of taking turns being the parent versus being the breadwinner. Now, Missy and I have actually done that. Missy and I have traded places over the years. So for the first big piece of our relationship, I was out there doing the traditional thing. I was out there doing the hunting and everything, and Missy was my most important advisor and all that, but she was also holding down the entire fort for our family. Then after our kids got to a certain age, we flipped that. mistook over a couple of our companies. And I, because especially our boys were getting to the point where it was time for me to step in and do some raising of the kids. And I learned during that time, Jordan, that Missy's twice the business person I am. She is so gifted. And I got to see her, like I'd taken some of these companies as far as I could with my masculine energy. And when I stepped back and handed the baton to her, watching what she did with her feminine energy, I was in friggin' awe, and she busted us through two of our businesses. She exploded them. And so we've taken turns back and forth, dividing and conquering. And that's something you might want to consider, Tanya, you know, going back and forth. Anyway, how fortunate are we that we live in a time and a place where we can even have a conversation like this for the first time in human history?
Yes.
You can decide how you want it to go, and you can make it just that way, you and your husband.
Love it.
And I have faith in you. You're going to do it.
I agree. And fire lots of bullets. Don't give up. And let us know how it's going. Best of luck to you, Tanya. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention at Gracious Jewels Shop on Instagram. That is my wife's shop. I have a feeling that the audience members are asking because she makes crystal jewelry.
Say it again. You guys, this is amazing stuff. Say it again.
At Gracious Jewels Shop. If one of you guys bought one of her necklaces, she would love it. They're really incredible. They're real crystals, and she has mushrooms growing out of them, you know, like clay mushrooms and clay trees. And just check it out, guys. I had to say it. Best of luck to you, Tanya. We believe in you. Final question coming from Rick. What's the biggest financial mistake you've ever made, and what did you learn/how did you recover?
Oh man, this is the end of the podcast. We don't have enough time.
I was going to say, should we spin the wheel?
No, listen. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life. I've made a lot of money in my life. I've never been a good investor. I've never been a good saver. All my mistakes were basically around investing. So I've lost money in the market, and like huge, like the 2000, 2001 correction where all the tech companies tanked, like basically every massive market correction, I've lost money there. Painful, painful, painful. And what I learned from that, the big lesson, only invest in what you know. Mm-hmm. I've lost money on startups, a lot of money. And one in particular, millions of dollars, very, very, very painful. And what I learned through those experiences is have a hell of a lot more respect for the downside. I'm not very risk adverse. When I get excited about an idea, I want to go all the way, and I tend to not have enough respect for the downside. You need to plan A, B, C, and D, because one thing that we all know, everyone who's been through Lifebook Mastery, you know this principle. You can have the best plan in the world, and one thing that we know is that it's not going to survive first contact with the enemy. Mm-hmm. Nothing ever goes according to plan. So you've got to be there with a plan B, C, and D. And you've got to have a lot of respect for the downside. Business is hard. And this is something that you don't hear many people say. Business is a chain in which any link that gets broken, the entire business is broken.
Right.
You can have everything perfect except for your sales and marketing. Everything perfect except for your sourcing. Everything perfect except for your warehouse distribution. Everything perfect except for your product quality. And your whole business is screwed. Business is hard. Have respect for the downside. And then I guess the biggest thing is that once you've made money, once you're holding money in your hand and you're getting ready to invest it, make sure that you put it in a place where you can't lose your principal. That's just so important. If I would have known those three things, you know, only invest in what you know, have respect for the downside because things aren't ever going to go completely according to plan, and never lose your principal, my whole life would have been completely different. And I've had a blessed financial life, but I've gotten my ass kicked too. And I've learned a lot of lessons, and I'm so grateful to be able to share the painful lessons that I've learned with the Lifebook community. And hopefully some of the people out there that are listening to this are not going to have to make those painful mistakes.
Totally.
You know, and that's a good thing, you guys. And this is a principle. Anytime that you've been down a road and you know what the pitfalls are, and you see somebody else going down that road, I almost feel like it's a responsibility. I don't like to give advice where it's not requested, because you got to be careful with that. But I almost also feel like it's a responsibility to help the people around you by sharing the knowledge that you have and hopefully stopping them from making a big mistake that you've made.
Totally. Not having to get their butts kicked to learn the same lesson, just empathizing with you and receiving the same value. I like that a lot. I have a couple financial mistakes. I think that I'm aged enough now to answer this question myself. Can I share two of my own?
Absolutely.
So one thing that really got me was investing too early and over-investing, right? So I would get some money and I would think to myself, oh, now I have enough to invest, only to have to pull out that investment because I wasn't earning enough or, you know, buffering enough for my living expenses. And then you're losing on the spread and you're missing out on all this stuff when you could have been focusing on accumulating your wealth, increasing your earning power, and then going on to investing. So I actually made some really great stock picks and made some good money on crypto. The problem was I had to pull my money out and missed out on all this stuff, and I had to spend it because I invested too soon. So that's definitely one that I think is common. And then the other one kind of ties in with my advice to Tanya, which is I really let the slippery slope of credit catch up to me through my businesses, because I was doing the online thing where you don't need a brick and mortar store. All you need is a domain name, and that only costs $12 a year. And then you just need hosting, and that's $7 a month. But then you start another project and that takes $20 a month, and just slap it on the credit card. And then you need an SSL, and that's just a couple dollars, but that'll go on the credit card. Next thing you know, you got tens of thousands of dollars in credit card debt for companies that are either struggling or long gone or just haven't turned a profit yet. That slippery slope of credit is tough. Did you ever struggle with credit?
I didn't because I grew up in a different world than you, Jordan, but you probably just gave the best financial advice that you could ever give to a millennial, because that's the trap that, and all of a sudden you're spending the rest of your life playing catch up. That is friggin' awesome advice. Debt, you guys, debt is the death threat. If you don't have debt, you've got flexibility. If you don't have debt, Totally. You've got opportunity. You get yourself in debt, your options all of a sudden become incredibly limited. So Jordan, I'm so glad you threw that in.
Yeah, and I think that your people, you entrepreneurs, have really learned to entice the millennial, which is $19 a month. It's just $19 a month. Just put it on your card. Don't worry about it. But those things add up, man. You really got to be careful.
And if you're so glad you threw that in.
If you're putting that on your credit card, stay conscious.
I want to share one more thing that came to my mind that I think is important, Jordan, to share. And here's what it is. Years ago, when my primary source of income was going down, it was obvious. It was a graph. I could absolutely tell. And Missy and I didn't react near quickly enough in cutting expenses. Mm. So we found ourselves in a tough place where our overhead was still huge, but our income was going lower. And so here's what the financial principle around that is this: time really is money. You need to move quickly. When you start to see a negative trend, the faster you can respond to it, the better. Totally. When you start to see a positive trend, put some systems and processes in place to make sure you're going to capture the value that you're creating. You really have to stay on top of this category. You can't just let it run on autopilot. You know what I'm saying, Jordan?
100%. 100%, man. And I never thought of what you just said, which is the first thing you said is you got to, you know, drop stakes when your bankroll gets low, if you will. You know, if your money's going down, you got to act fast. But what I never thought of is the second thing you said was if you see promise, you need to be acting equally as fast
totally.
To amplify that.
Otherwise, your opportunity can slip through your fingers.
Missed
the bottom
value.
Line is, we really do have to stay on top of this category and react quickly. This category really is about paying attention to what's happening and making decisions in real time that will get you where you want to go over time.
Totally.
So, awesome.
Love it. What a great list of questions. Some great
yeah,
riffing
for
in
sure.
there, man.
Thank you so much, Lifebook members. We really appreciate these questions. They're super important. This stuff keeps us sharp. It really, when you share the challenges that you're having or the questions that you have with us and we roll those back out to the community, that just helps everybody. We really appreciate it.
Man, that's what Lifebook's all about, because you people have such interesting thoughts and scenarios that we could never imagine. So keep sending them in. We love hearing from you. And yeah, we look forward to providing more wisdom next month, right?
Absolutely. Been great spending this time with you, JB.
Yeah, man. As always, fantastic show. Thank you all for listening. All you Lifebook members, we love you. This is John Butcher and Jordan River signing off, wishing you an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.